Everyone join me in welcoming Maureen.
Thank you. I wanted to start by telling you a little story that happened years ago. As you can tell, I'm on oxygen, so I have a very rare fatal lung disease. And my lungs collapse all the time. It's like having a balloon and an air hole gets popped in it. So in this one time, I've actually, between my two lungs, they've collapsed 47 or 48 times.
My goodness.
I've had many, many lung collapses. In this particular, early on in my lung disease, one of the procedures that I've done many times is where they put a chest tube in the side of my chest, but they're trying to figure out literally how to reinflate the lung. And part of what my lung disease does is it literally creates these benign tumors inside my lungs that eat away healthy lung tissue. And they just take over. And so my lungs, I'm told by my pulmonologist, are 10 times heavier than most people's lungs. And all my muscles are, with only 10% lung capacity, I'm lifting up lungs that are 10 times heavier. So they want to get my lung reinflated as soon as possible. And in this particular case, this is one of the earlier times when I had a lung collapse. And after being in the hospital for a couple of months, they still could not, no matter what surgery or what thing they did, they couldn't get the hole to go back up. And so they then decided that they were going to basically, the way they described it, was light my lungs on fire. So if you imagine that if you had a balloon, you blew up a balloon, and you put it in a paper bag, if you pop the balloon, but glued the outside of the balloon to the inside of the bag, the balloon would not go down, right? It would be glued. That's the procedure they've done many times in my lungs. So in essence, they inject a burning agent into my chest cavity that's gluing, creating enough scar tissue to glue my lung to my chest cavity so that when it pops, like a balloon, it doesn't go all the way down. And then you're more apt to, like, get the hole to heal itself. Because oftentimes the holes are in little flaps and they can't figure out exactly where they are or how to reinflate the lung.
Ouch.
Ouch is right. That's the other piece of this. I am actually violently allergic to all pain medication. So most people, they'll tell you, when you have this particular procedure done, you don't go under. You're wide awake. They said they will give most people the highest doses of morphine available.
Oh.
And that it won't even touch it for the first 10 hours because it's that painful. And I didn't even have that as an option. In all the years that I've had the same procedure done on both lungs, I've never had any pain medication. But there was something about this particular time, because my dad decided to stay with me while I was going through the procedure. And I think it was as hard for him. Like, your lungs are on fire. Like, I was screaming. The doctors and the nurses that were doing it, they were, like, really having a hard time. And my dad, who I'd maybe seen cry once in my life, was sobbing, like, sobbing watching this. And that whole feeling of, like, you want to stop your child from being in pain. And there was an interesting experience at that moment of being kind of out of my body because the pain was so enormous, and watching these other people do this dance with my pain while I'm doing a dance with my pain. And it kind of hit me, because I've been working in the science of collaboration for years, looking at relationships and groups of people and why you can take a group of really intelligent, brilliantly self-aware people and bring them all together. Why doesn't it work perfectly? And I've been studying that and creating tools and resources around that for years. And I realized in that moment of all this going on with my lungs that we had a series of relationships in that room. We were all collaborating to get my lung to reinflate, to not quite have as much pain, to see how much they could push it before, you know, they got enough without going too far. And it really struck me how much health is a series of relationships. Now, the majority of them are non-human entities. So I can say, yes, I have a relationship with my practitioner, my caregivers, people in my life who I'm, you know, who are helping me with things. And that makes a lot of sense. And I work really diligently to create really healthy, effortless relationships around my health and all the other people that it touches. But what I began to see is that there's this series of non-human entities that we're in relationship with, whether we see it or not. So we're either doing that dance in the relationship. So one of them, to me, it's an ecosystem of relationships that have to do with our health. So sometimes it's my own mind that I got to be in right relationship with. When I don't feel like getting up and stretching after I sat down for too long. When I don't feel like eating that healthy food and I really want dark chocolate instead. There's so many of those pieces with my own mind that I want to be in right relationship with. But then there's other things like money and finances or the hospital creditors that call my house on a regular basis. For years, I've had over $500,000 in medical bills because I didn't have insurance for years. And you know, there became a time where I just stopped answering the phone. I didn't care if anyone else was calling me. I didn't need to talk to anyone else as long as I didn't have to talk to one more hospital or doctor's office. And mostly because I felt this deep pain over not being able to pay everything. But when you go for 2 and 3 month hospital stays, which I've done over and over again, like that stuff adds up. And then the doctor, the hospital, every type of doctor, the different things are all wanting to be paid as separate bills. It's not like you can just easily consolidate them. So I started realizing like, okay, I'm not in a healthy relationship with the hospitals or the doctors or the companies that are calling me to get the money. How can I create a healthy collaboration with pain, with finances, with my own mind, with all the things that with exercise, with good food, with the way I'm interacting with the whole world, the way I see things. This is collaboration. Health is collaboration. But because it's not always with another person, like I think, oh, it's my health, it's my lungs, there's things I've got to figure out. The beauty of realizing that is knowing, in fact, someone once said to me, I don't remember what the conversation was, but at one point, whatever was going on, it was some struggle, I think, with a company I was working with. And they said, well, you know, I know it's been really hard, but at least you have your health. And then she goes, oh my God, you don't even have your health. Like, you're screwed. And I was like, actually, that's not the case. Because I've spent years really looking at how I'm collaborating with all these entities, I am one of the healthiest people you will ever meet. Literally. Now, technically, I was put on hospice 13 years ago. The lovely hospice workers came for a while, and then they said, you know, why don't you just call us when you're really ready to die, because you don't seem to be dying. But I've had so little lung capacity for so long. The lung disease that I have, it's got a really long name. It's called lymphangioleiomyomatosis. And it's an estrogen-driven disease that's only in women. And there are about 1,000 women worldwide that have it, so it's very rare. And I went for a little over 7 years of having every crazy thing go on in my body with no diagnosis because no one knew what it was. That's an interesting relationship in and of itself. I didn't have people to go to for my resources or understanding or learning about this disease because I hadn't even been diagnosed with it yet. So through a series of experiments of really, really having to find my own way, this is my husband, Zell. Say hi to Zell. Yes! He is literally the most extraordinary human being I've ever met. But I met Zell the year that my doctors told me I'd be dead. Because most people, they say the onset is in childbearing years, so like late teens, early 20s. And then in 10 years, you're gone. That was the diagnosis I was given. And when they finally diagnosed me, I was actually about 7.5 years into my 10 years, so it was going to be pretty quick. And then shortly after that, I met Zell. And that was another key piece of like, all right, I'm meeting this new person, but what a fascinating thing to say, yeah, I'm probably going to be dead soon, but I'd be happy to go to dinner with you. Like, what does that mean? What do you do? You're not doing the, you know, let's get engaged and get married and have the white picket fence and the 2.5 kids. Like, the traditional way of being in relationship wasn't there for me. The traditional way of, like, figuring out, you know, this is the disease you have, these are the routes that you take, that wasn't there for me. The pain that I have, the fact that I have I cannot take any pain medication. And I actually, one of the things that's crazy about the lung disease, so it's estrogen driven, but they don't really understand what's happening with estrogen. So it creates all these tumors in my lungs. But it also causes all the side effects of pregnancy in my body without being pregnant. So I went through a lot of crazy years of thinking, I must be a hypochondriac, or I'm out of my mind, like I have no idea what's going on. It is a genetic disease, so I had it at birth, but it's not hereditary, so I won't be passing it on to my kids, which is nice. But it was just a really interesting ecosystem of non-traditional relationships that I was experiencing. And that's what led me on the path to be thinking, okay, what is it that I'm doing with this life, with this body, with this health that I want to be in? because I do want to be an incredibly healthy person no matter what goes on. I want to have a great relationship with physical pain, even though there's a darn good chance it's never going to end. And sitting here today, I can absolutely tell you, if the pain was going to be gone tomorrow, if you guys, someone had in the room had a pill and they're like, take this, your pain will be gone, I would take it in a heartbeat. I have no need for the pain in that sense. But if it doesn't go tomorrow, I am so good with that. And a big piece of that comes from looking at pain as an entity, its own organism, with a heartbeat, with a personality, with a way of being. And how do I want to relate and be in a daily relationship with that? So Zell, could you change to the next slide? So in any relationship, whether it's something with your health or another person, there's always at least three entities. There's you, there's me, and there's this third entity of we. And that we entity is literally, like I said, its own organism. It does have a heartbeat and a personality and a way of being. So if that's the case, what are the we entities that I'm a part of within this ecosystem of my health? And oftentimes we'll call it a we-co-system because it's an ecosystem of this we entity, right? So when you start taking a look at, you know, how many we entities am I a part of? How are all those we entities interacting with other ones? And I began to really study and pay attention to how I was showing up. I have all the pain. Like, one of the major side effects of LAM is the short name for my disease, is I have migraines. So I used to have migraines that would come and go. Like, maybe the longest one I'd had, I think, before this one was maybe 2.5 months. The migraine I have right now, with probably on a scale of 1 to 10, would be maybe an 8.5 right now. The migraine that I have right now started 13 years ago, and 24 hours a day. I've had it 24 hours a day. In the beginning, the first couple of years, I was in the emergency room a lot. And if nothing else, I at least was in a dark room, 5 ice packs on my head, no sound, no light, nothing. But then again, it was this, all right, here's this we entity of me and a migraine. What is this relationship? How can I make this relationship something? It may not go away, and 13 years later, it still hasn't. Maybe it'll be gone tomorrow, I don't know. But I want to create a relationship with what it is right now. For my own sake, for the fact that being healthy is something I want, and I know that I can create. And looking at the migraine through that lens, I began to see that physical pain was something that had more levels to it, more to say to me than I could have imagined. Can you change to the next slide? So I began to look at, to me it's a mindful design of the way that I'm seeing health and my relationship to health. So we tend to look at health as fixing something that's broken. There's so many stories I've been given over the years about, like, oh, your bad health and how awful it is. I mean, when I was told that I would die at this 10-year mark, my two kids are right here. They're now 22 and 24. But they were like 2 and 4 at the time. And the number of stories people gave me were like, oh, that's so awful for your children and you poor thing. And God, what are you going to do? And it's agonizing for everybody. And I was like, wow, on the days I feel like it's agonizing, it's really heavy and the pain is worse. Isn't that fascinating? And this whole concept of fixing what's broken is a way we look at the world. Like, I can understand, like, if something's broken, yes, I want to fix it. But what I started, I often consider myself like the princess and the pea, because there's so much physical pain going on in my body at any given moment. I don't have sort of the luxury of like, well, one thing's in pain and then that stops and then another one starts. Like, there's so many that are constant.
So many peas.
So, yes, exactly. So how do I actually look at that space of all these different things of pain going on from a different perspective of not, I don't need to fix myself. I'm not broken. There isn't a problem with me. There's not even a problem with the fact that my brain seems to resonate with pain more than most people's do. Mm-hmm. It's something that's going on, and how do I want to actually be in flow with it, whether it's happening or not happening? So that, to me, shifted my whole way of seeing the world from this idea of fixing what was broken, because a lot of people would lovingly give me the, oh, you poor thing, you're broken. I'm so sorry you're broken, which is really kind, the perspective they're coming from, but it's not actually easier on my body. And then I end up having to sort of hold other people up because they're so worried about me or they're so worried about my kids. So when I shifted to this idea of what does this make possible? What does looking at health from this viewpoint make possible? What does having a migraine make possible for me that it maybe doesn't have for someone else? What does it make possible that I've been on oxygen since I was in my 30s? You know, for a lot of people, when you're in your 30s and you go on oxygen, that's another one of those, like, oh, that's awful, you poor thing, and that shouldn't be happening. I remember when the guy who came to set up my oxygen, he took a look at me, he goes, you're just going to be on this for a few days, I'm sure, and I'll be back to pick it up. 13 years later, I don't think it's ever happening. But there's a lot of story that was shifting inside of me. When I started to look at stress in my system, stress in the world, something I see, something I don't like in someone, or what's going on in my body, or whatever's happening in the world, I started to look at it from this idea of what does this make possible, and I realized that I could use stress for clarity. Not as a message of like, oh, isn't this awful? Let me grab onto that and let my subconscious brain run that round the clock. How can I take a look at what does this make possible? And that opened up a whole new set of possibilities for me. And that what does this make possible idea is a different way of, it's like running different neural circuitry in the brain. Can you click to the next one? So as we've been, my husband and I run the Center for Collaborative Awareness, and as we've been working around the world creating tools to help groups collaborating in business or community, one of the things we really look at is through this lens of neuroscience. So if you look at the human brain over a period of our evolution, we really have evolved to do two main functions in our brain, the two major ones. Part of it is what we call our safety brain. That's the protection part. That's this. I love my safety brain. It's helpful to pull my hand back from a hot stove. It says, don't walk down that dark alley tonight. I want my safety brain on. I want it to be able to give me messages when I need them. On the other hand, the other main function for survival for the human species that our brain does is connected brain. That's this. We need both this and this. But what I found as I started researching my own self, I was like, I am a series of experiments on myself, I swear. And as I started looking at how things were impacting me, including my thinking, I began to realize that, wow, safety brain is autopilot habit loops. And the whole world will give you all kinds of reasons why your safety brain should be the autopilot thing that comes up first. Protect yourself first. But what I found is every time I ran safety brain, it hurt more, and I couldn't breathe. Like, if I'm stressed out, I can't lift my arms over my head. They actually call my disease the disease of strangulation, because eventually you have so many tumors in your lungs, you die feeling like you're going to be strangled to death, which, of course, they give you morphine for the last, like, part of your life, and I won't be able to take. So there's a whole group of people that are trying to figure out that one for me. But this idea that in safety brain, as much as I want to use it, because it's really useful, I want to protect myself sometimes, I started to understand that having that on autopilot made life really challenging. It made showering pretty much impossible. Days like, you know, I couldn't get out of bed if I was stressed out about something. And especially in the early days when all the, like, medical bills started coming in, and I was just like, I don't know what to do with these. Like, I feel overwhelmed. And when you're sick, you're not working. So it's not like I'm working to pay back the bills. It's the combination of the two. And all this stress would start running in my head. And then I'd start worrying about, you know, people would be like, well, what are you going to do with the kids when you die? I mean, there's all these big conversations people were agonizingly and lovingly having with me. And as I started paying attention to how my body was feeling and how much I could breathe and how much I could get accomplished or what I could do in a day, I started to realize that running this connected brain neural circuitry was way more powerful for me. It gave me more energy. And I started to look at these different versions of me. So I could wake up in the morning and I could, let's say I have to, maybe I'm going to write an article and I'm going to get some shopping done at the grocery store and I'm going to look at emails. Let's say those are the three things I'm going to do in a day. I can run those things with my safety brain neural circuitry as the higher order, okay? And what ends up happening is I either like, oh my God, I just can't even get my brain online to write this stupid article, and then I get upset with myself for not writing the article, and then I'm too tired to even go to the store to get groceries, so I end up eating food that's already in the fridge that isn't really good for me. Or, you know, it's a lot easier to, again, eat dark chocolate than it is to make something. So there's a whole series of ways of being when I run safety brain. And because I'm like the princess and the pea, did I say that already?
No.
Okay, so because I'm like the princess and the pea, and I feel that stress so soon, in my experiments with myself, I'm like, whoa, like feel how much harder it is to breathe when you're just a little upset about having to go to the grocery store. Like, that's really fascinating. And I started to see that if I woke up, same day, same list of things to do with the same body, but I was running my connected brain neural circuitry. This is really, these are the circuits in our brain that tell us, like, we're all connected, we're all one, we're in this together, we're safe, we're good, you know, life is good. And that, to me, is our natural state. That's the natural state as humans. And safety brain should be something that comes up periodically when we need that protection. But instead, we put safety brain on at first. We all run around. We watch television and we see an ad that says, if you don't buy this car or this shampoo or whatever, like, you're not going to have what it takes and you're going to die alone and unloved. Like, the messages we're bombarded with, like, heaven forbid I have dandruff because literally I'm going to die alone and unloved. It's so pervasive. We don't even realize that we're doing it. So we're in this really deep relationship with our safety brain. I want to be in relationship with my safety brain. But what I wanted to start doing was mindfully deciding which version of me I wanted to be. But the first step was awareness. I spent a while just paying attention to, like, okay, who is the me when I'm feeling stressed? How do I talk to other people? What do I get done? How does my body feel? How much harder is it to breathe? And I really paid attention to who that is, that version of me is. Then I really paid attention to and had awareness around, okay, when I'm feeling happy and I'm reaching out to other people and I'm smiling and I'm looking at something funny instead of something dreadful, like, who am I in that space? How much more energy do I have? How much do I impact the world when I'm that version of me? So this awareness space happened first. But as I was doing, like, some different experiments, one thing I do, I actually put stress on a timer. I'm not kidding. Like, pick, if you get stressed out tomorrow, pick up your phone, put on a timer for 15 minutes, and go at it. Like, be pissed, yell and scream and swear and do whatever it is you want to do. And when the timer goes off, just check in. Like, if you want 15 more minutes, put 15 more minutes on the clock. So for me, I can mindfully use my safety brain and be stressed out in 15-minute increments for the rest of my life. But that's mindful design. That's not the habit loop, my subconscious mind taking control of me and making me live from that place. That's me mindfully choosing that I want to be in safety brain. Okay? That is powerful. Just to put it on a timer is really powerful. Now, typically what happens is, after the first or second 15 minutes are up, I am so bored with myself that I don't feel like doing it anymore. And sometimes I don't even remember what I'm upset about after I've had my 15 minutes, which is fascinating because it's literally taking something off. It's like the record that's skipping. I'm taking it off and putting on a different song. So as you begin to look, can you change to the next slide? Thank you. So as you begin to look at the relationship you have, this ecosystem around your health, and you know what are the multiple entities that come into play. Is it the exercise you're doing, or how you're eating, or how you spend your time, or who you spend your time with, or the movies that you see, or the news that you get every day? What are the different relationships you're in that impact either having, like, I have really good health. I know that sounds crazy, but I really am an incredibly healthy person. But that was from choice, right? It's not about I'm trying to build a relationship with this perfect health, like, and I'm not going to really be happy until I get to perfect health, or they get, you know, some way to stop this disease from ever happening. Like, I'm not looking for some idealized concept of health. I'm looking for what relationship I want to be in with health each day. And it's not a forever kind of thing. I'm not picking today and then, you know, saying, okay, now I know better. I need to do this every day. I want to be really mindfully choosing it on any given day, because that's what puts me in the present moment of being able to choose more connected brain than safety brain. And over time, because of the different experiments I've done, I've literally, like, I now have joy as my autopilot. What my husband and I often call it burping. What was my... Oh, my... My microphone came down. Sorry about that. So Zoe and I often call it burping, which sounds kind of crazy. But you know how when you're doing whatever, and all of a sudden some like upset thought just rises up in you out of nowhere. You know how that happens? Well, now that I have connected brain as my autopilot and safety brain on periodically, literally joy does that to me, where I'm like caught off guard by like, I have to turn to Zelle all of a sudden and go, oh my God, I love you so much. Like, and there's no way to stop it. It's like a burp. I couldn't have not said it if my life depended on it. That's my brain retraining itself to be in a different relationship. But I really needed to look at health from all these entities. And I ask you, what are the non-human entities that impact your health one way or the other? And you could be someone who has, you know, a body that's in really great health, but you just want to eat better or exercise more or, you know, pay attention to how your mind is looking at the world. It doesn't mean you have to have a disease to look at it from this perspective. So one of the things, one of the tools that I've created that sort of houses my experiments that I do on me, looks at who I am in relationship to all these different entities, is a collaboration process that my husband and I created 18 years ago now. It's called the Blueprint of We Collaboration Process. And it really is a collaboration document. It's a written document that you do with human or non-human entities to create a great collaborative relationship. It's now, we created it purely for our own personal relationship because we met the year I was going to die. And it was like, if we're not doing the normal thing, if we're not picking relationship off the shelf and doing that, like, what the heck are we doing? We have to design this so that it fits whoever we are. And because I didn't know how long I was going to live, we started doing it on a daily basis. Like, how do we just design a life together that feels really present today and goes no farther than that? Which was a great gift. Because we didn't have this forever myth to measure somebody up against, we ended up really paying it, because to be truthful, neither one of us would have chosen each other. We were not like a good match. All our friends tried to break us up at the beginning. No one believed we'd make it at all. And truly, there's a handful of people in here who know me. You guys know, like, any day, this is one of the best relationships I know I've ever experienced or seen. But I really attribute it to doing the blueprint and being in this really present space of designing who we are and who we want to be together. So in this case, you can switch it. Let me tell you really quick, just as a side note, there's a simple structure that goes on with the blueprint. I want you to think about this in relation to your health or entity or multiple entities that involve your health. So you could do a blueprint collaboration document with money, because you're in relationship with money, whether you think so or not. Like, it's a full-on relationship. It can piss you off. It can go away when you really need it. There's all kinds of things that money does. I want to pay attention to that. And who am I when money does what money does, and who is money when I do what I do? So there's five components that each entity writes about. Now, non-human entities, like, we will give voice to it, right? But the simple structure is first the story of us. I'm going to write down, like, say I do a blueprint just with my health in general. I want to write down in the story of us, like, why am I drawn to being in a good relationship with my health? Why is that useful to me? Why is it important? And let me capture that positive perspective. Like, when I'm in really good relationship with my health, who am I? What do I look like? What am I doing? How am I treating other people? How do I show up in the world? What do I accomplish? I want to capture that positive perspective, because there are going to be days when I can't find it at all, and I want to go back and read it on paper, because I got to be reminded. I don't have it accessible. That's one thing that's amazing about our safety brain, is when we start running those safety brain neural circuits, we literally shut off a third to a half of our brain capacity, which makes sense. Like, if there's a bear charging at me, I don't want compassion. I don't want to open my arms and get curious about why the bear does what it does. Like, that wouldn't make any sense. It needs to shut down creativity and compassion and all kinds of things. I get that. But in my daily life, I'm looking at too many things that aren't bears as bears. So the story of us helps me remember. When I can't remember my good days with health, if I have it written down, I can start those different neural circuits of connected brain that get me back to that story that I want to be living again. And maybe there's some alterations or changes I need to make with how I'm, you know, living my life or what I'm doing that help me get back to that state. So the second thing each entity writes about is called inner action styles and warning signs. And this is just like, here's who I am, here's how I operate, just like you would with another person. Let me tell you about who I am. This is me. Like, my inner action styles when I'm in good health look like this. But also, it's the warning signs. Here's what I look like when me and health aren't doing a very good dance. I look like this, I feel like this, it shows, here's an early warning sign, here's the off the cliff way that it's going to be, and I get really clear, I'm paying attention on a regular basis. And the beauty of having done the first blueprint with Zell is that I now call myself a Zellthropologist. So I'm an anthropologist of Zell. And Zell is actually short. It was a name given to him. It's short for gazelle, like the African deer. So I imagine him like out on the savanna in his natural habitat. And we began to sort of watch, like once we had the blueprint, it was like, wow, he just did that movement. Like, what does that one mean? And I got curious about it. So the interaction styles and warning signs were a way for us to really know ourselves and know one another and exchange that information. Then there's custom design, where it's like, I want to mindfully design what this relationship, in the case of health, what is my relationship to health? I see other people having this kind or this kind or this kind. What are the bits and pieces I want to pick, or what comes up in my mind around that? The next one is called Questions for Peace and Possibility. This is actually a space where you're creating your most like compassionate, emotionally intelligent self on paper ahead of time to get you back to a good place or turn up the volume on something that really works whenever you need it. And then the last one is short and long-term time frames. And this is the commitment you have to yourself that you will go no longer than a certain amount of time if the relationship feels like it's not in a good place. Like it's really easy for something to happen with our health and we kind of like don't do the dance of getting it back into alignment. And then we slide out a little further and a little further and then suddenly we feel so buried by whatever's happening, we don't know our way out. So you choose a time frame ahead of time. So the reason that I give you the structure of the blueprint is I want you to understand that even with a human or a non-human entity, you can mindfully design, custom design a relationship that fits for you. But you have to pay attention to who are you in safety brain, who are you in connected brain, and then you have to be able to moment by moment choose which one you want to be. Neither one is right or wrong, ever. But I want you to pick it. I want you to pick when you're running the safety brain stress. I want you to put it on a timer, or I want you, one of the experiments that I did, do you want to move on to the next one? Actually, Kate, could you hand out those papers? One of the experiments I did, I was watching a film, and I noticed that there was a person hooked up to a lie detector machine in the film, and I've never been hooked up to one, but in the movies, it's like they put the little leads on your fingers and on your chest. And I realized a lie detector machine is just measuring the physical response to the things that you think, right? So if that's the case, then any time I'm thinking or believing a lie, the machine would go off, right? So I literally put a piece of Velcro around my finger for 30 days because I wanted to simulate for myself what it would be like if I were hooked up to a lie detector machine 24 hours a day, how often would it go off? So in the case of having this Velcro on my finger, it was this idea that I want to know every time I feel a little bit of stress. So let's say I'm believing something like there's not enough time, or that person wasn't very nice to me, or I can't believe that, you know, I read an article about people doing this in the world. Every time I would do things like that and I would run the safety brain neural circuitry, that lie detector would go off. On some level, my heart rate gets higher, right? My whole body starts, my blood pressure changes. That meant to me that I'm believing a lie. When I think I don't have enough time, when I think I'm not enough, when I think there's a problem, those are the reactions my body has, the very things they measure when someone's lying. So where am I experiencing? Where am I lying to myself? Where am I believing things that aren't really true? And then I'm letting them run me, and I'm getting more anxiety built on more anxiety because that's what happens. It's like double-clicking an application with stress. It'll go ahead and double-click another thing and another thing and another thing until it's like the tree of stress is open, right? So one of the things, do you have the Band-Aids?
Yes, so it's, just so you know, 7:22.
Oh, there was an hour scheduled for the talk. Because I wanted to break you up into pairs and have you do a little bit of something before you go, if you need to leave at the 7:30 mark, please head out. That's totally cool. And if not, I'd love to keep you guys an extra 20, 30 minutes so that you can really get an experience with this. But feel free to go whenever you need to. Okay.
So if you want to be doing your own experiment.
Velcro.
Yeah, well, this isn't Velcro. After I did the 30 days with Velcro, it did not feel very good. So now we've done this with so many clients around the world. Now we have them put a Band-Aid on. If you put a Band-Aid on your finger, choose a couple days if you want to. My experiment was 30 days. put a Band-Aid on, just as a reminder. Look at that as like, oh, I'm hooked up to a lie detector machine all day long. If you want to try the experiment, just see. See how often your body would be responding because something's going on. And then stop yourself and say, okay, what is the lie that I'm believing? And how can I take a look at it from another perspective to slow myself down, to be a little more mindful, to question why I'm believing that, to get more curious instead of being judgmental? When I started shifting away from safety brain and into connected brain, my relationships to many things started to change. The lie detector experiment was just one of them. So one of the things that I want to have you try out is there's on the page, the top half of the page is what you see up here. And I gave you a couple of examples of how I've used it. In the center column, I want you to pick three things, or you know, one or two or three things, that you do in relation to health. And you can see there's some examples written on the paper, too. Like it might be exercising every day. It might be how you spend time with a particular friend who really makes you feel good. What are the things that you do in relation to having good health or that you know are part of your health? It could be paying your bills. It could be, you know, getting healthier food at the grocery store. You pick what it is. And then I want you to start paying attention. This is the awareness phase of, there's a version of you. If you were to run that in safety brain with sort of like the stress, the judgment, the anxiety, all the things that we tend to let happen in our lives, if you were to run those things, so mine is like stretch my muscles because I sit so often. With 10% lung capacity, I'm not running around much, and all my muscles get really super tight. And so I need to get up multiple times a day, and actually my legs get like blue and purple and swell if I don't. But it's so easy when I just don't feel like it because I'm tired because I don't have a lot of lung capacity. I don't feel like getting up and stretching. So safety brain version of me finds every reason in the book not to do it. Like it's not going to matter. I don't care. I'll live with the pain that I'm going to get from it. I'll figure it out. Like there's a whole version of me that shows up. On the flip side, there's a connected brain version of me. So gosh, it's now probably a couple years ago now. I decided to attach stretching to brushing my teeth. And I did this because I know I'm going to brush my teeth multiple times a day, so why don't you start by connecting it to something I know I'm already doing. No one has to tell me, Maureen, brush your teeth. Like, I do it. Why can't I do stretching in the same way? So I literally started, like, I've got a whole routine of stretching while I'm brushing my teeth. I do have an electric toothbrush. That helps. But the cool thing about it that I didn't realize, and then at one point I had listened to some sort of meditation that was giving, the mantra was, I am my own internal healing, and I really liked that. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to add that. So now I brush my teeth, I do my stretches, and the whole time I'm doing it, and I end up brushing my teeth a long time, which is awesome because I've had so many medical bills for so many years. I haven't gone to the dentist nearly as much as I should. But the funniest thing, which totally cracked me up about this, I went recently, like what, a month ago or something, after not having gone for years. And I was all like a little nervous, like, oh my God, they're gonna look at my teeth and go, why haven't you been in here? And instead, the hygienist works on my teeth a little bit, and then she goes, wait a minute, when did you last get your teeth clean? And she goes to look at my chart. She goes, was it recently? And I thought actually she was like going to get upset with me. And I said, no, it's been a while. And she goes, because you have absolutely no plaque on your teeth. I thought maybe you had your teeth cleaned recently. I was like, that's my stretching and my mantra. It's even working on my teeth. There's something about the time I spend at least twice a day, sometimes three times brushing my teeth, in doing those things that I've connected something towards my health. So that's the connected brain version of me. I very rarely do safety brain version of me with stretching anymore. It just doesn't happen. So there's another one. Eat dark chocolate as pain medicine. This was another interesting one because I began to tell myself, this. My experiment was, how do I link the thought, that's too sweet for me, to sugary chocolate? Because I don't eat a lot of sweet stuff, except I love dark chocolate. It literally is my pain medication. But I started noticing that I was eating sweeter and sweeter chocolate. Mm-hmm. So the experiment I made on this one was, every time I eat any food whatsoever, I'm going to say the words either out loud or to myself, that's too sweet for me. Because if someone offered me like cotton candy right now, I'd be like, oh, no way, that's too sweet for me. Like I just couldn't even comprehend eating it. So how do I attach that thought so that that becomes the autopilot habit loop? So I started doing that every time I would, you know, eat something, I would just say, that's too sweet for me. I just wanted to say it. And then a couple of months in, there's a particular chocolate ice cream that I've been eating for ages that I really love because it's not very sweet. And Zell brought me a bowl of it, and I took a bite, and I was like, ugh, Zell, I so don't want this. That's too sweet for me. And he turns and looks at me and goes, did you just say that or did that just say you? And I'm like, that said me. Like, I wasn't even, like, literally said me. And those are the kind of things that start happening when your connected brain becomes on autopilot, in the same way that stressful thoughts come out of nowhere and repeat themselves over and over again. So I now have pulled back so much, but like, it's only the darkest chocolate that I really like. I just don't eat, like, that's too sweet for me is my thing now. I can't eat most things because they're too sweet. So what I'd love to have you guys do, there's a second part to this I want to share too. In fact, could you switch to the next slide? So part of looking at these two versions of yourself, to begin to mindfully design this relationship you have with your health or multiple entities of your health, is to do an experiment connected to what connected brain version of you you want to start playing with. Who's that version of you that you want to know, that you want to have show up more often, that you want to have on autopilot? If you don't do experiments, it's sort of like if someone said to you, like, hey, if you really eat better, you know, you're gonna really make a difference in this thing that's going on in your body. That's good information. It's definitely true. And that doesn't mean I'm going to do it from now until the end of time. Knowing better doesn't always mean I do better. Sometimes I have to literally change my patterns in order to start doing that. But I find that the best way to do it is with an experiment. And the reason is, an experiment is literally something you're mindfully paying attention to. An experiment says, I'm going to try on that's too sweet for me for 2 weeks. I'm going to say it as often as possible. I'm going to connect it. I'm going to really pay attention to what sweet things I am and I'm not eating. And I have to check in on a daily basis, like, okay, how's this going? What am I thinking about it? Is it working? Is it not? Do I need to alter the experiment? And then at the end of the 2 weeks, you check in and you say, okay, so if you do this, do I want to go another 2 weeks? Does it feel like it's impacting me enough that I want to try for another 2 weeks? I've created so many experiments where initially it's like 2 weeks, 30 days, 3 days. Sometimes experiments feel overwhelming to do, and I only pick a couple of days. And then I'll just decide at the end of each one if I want to keep going. And then I wake up one day and I realize, like, oh, wow, that's not even an experiment anymore. It's just the way I live. It's just the way I show up. So what I want to have you do when you pair up is work together on coming up with, like, who are the two versions of you in safety brain and connected brain? And can you come up with an experiment where you can say, you know, the Band-Aid around your finger, like, that's too sweet for me. Like, maybe it's about spending a certain number of hours a day in, like, quiet reflection time, or taking more walks, or not reading the news for the next, not seeing any news whatsoever for the next 2 weeks. Like, you pick it. Find some small thing that happens to relate to whatever you put on the connected brain version of yourself, and I really encourage you to try it out and keep doing experiments, because the experiments will lead you to better and better relationship with all these human and non-human entities related to your health.
And use your Band-Aid or something else to remind you that you're in an experiment.
Yeah. The putting stress on a timer for 50 minutes, that started as an experiment. Now I just give myself that time. I don't always have to use the phone because I know full well I'm just going to let myself feel. Like, I'm not trying to hold back safety brain. I'm not trying to, like, stress is awesome, actually. Because stress is a messenger for clarity, stress is a messenger in the system. It's trying to get you to see that something you value, something you care about, is either happening or not happening. You either want more or less of something. I want to use that to my advantage. So I often see stress, I call it like a flashlight in a dark cave. Imagine that you've gone into a cave hunting around, and then it's getting dark, and now you've gone in far enough where you are completely lost. You have no idea how to find your way out. There's no one else with you. And after hours of searching and you're still lost, you curl up in a little ball in this dark cave and you're sobbing because you're not sure if you're ever going to make it out. If eventually someone came into that dark cave with a flashlight and they shined that bright light in your eyes, at first, like, you don't like it, you want it gone and take the flashlight away. But if you can calm yourself down for just a moment, you realize that you can take that flashlight for them, turn it around, and they are your way out. The person with the flashlight is stress. That represents stress to me. So if I get pissed off at someone, or I don't like something that's going on, or the pain in my body is just crazy, that's a flashlight for me. It's like, oh, okay, it's just getting me to pay attention. What do I want to pay attention to? What do I want more or less of that really helps me do this dance of this relationship? Because sometimes I get into bad places with my health relationship entities. That happens. It's not like I live some perfectly happy, easy life with all this pain in my body. There are days when it really sucks and it's hard. But those are so, like, the more I build this relationship with my health, those happen less often. The times like are little like blips on the screen instead of something that really pulls me down. It's very rare anymore that I have big stress where I really can't breathe. It's very rare. And it's a life that has me loving things exactly the way they are today without needing anything to change. But still, and this is one of the most important things for me in my relationship with health, I wake up as the creator of my life every single day, right? I get to be a creator. And if that's the case, then I get to decide not about what I want to fix that's broken, because I don't want to relate to the world as anyone or anything being broken. It's too hard to breathe when I do that. So if I'm looking at what does this make possible, and I wake up as the creator of my life, then there's all kinds of possibilities of what I want to create without having to label anything as bad or wrong or, you know, not good enough. And that gives me more energy. Like, that's why I can sit here and talk to you. I mean, literally, my pulmonologist says, it is not possible with your lung capacity to talk at this voice. Like, that shouldn't be happening. There's a whole series of things in my body that are so unexplainable because I'm living in a totally different place. And I can't even tell you how much it's kept me alive. So you know, most people are dead within 10 years. I've had it almost 30. Next year, I think, will be 30. And, you know, I was never expected. I just turned 50. I was never expected to live much past 30. So this is a totally different way of being in the world. And I can tell you that understanding collaboration in terms of our health will change so many things and how you start showing up with it and how it works for you. There's so much I've been given. Even the things of being on oxygen and having to live a slowed down pace. I can't run or go do a bunch of stuff. I literally have a leash at home on my oxygen tank. Like, I can't play hide and seek anymore because everybody knows from my cord exactly where I am. Like, what are the things that I've been given? Because I have a very different relationship to all these entities, and I see them as the entities in this ecosystem. So I'd love to have you pair up with somebody. Take a few minutes to just, if you pick one thing that has to do with your health. Talk about to one another, what do I look like when I'm running safety brain stress? And what do I look like when I'm running connected brain ease? Just know those two versions of yourself so you can choose which one you want to be in any given moment. And then you can figure out how you can do more autopilot experimentation of getting the connected brain version online.
So there are two parts. You're going to talk about, help each other explore what the safety brain and connected brain version of yourself is doing, whatever that thing that you do during the day.
Yep.
So you talk about that for a little while, get some information, and then you're going to create an experiment. If you'd like to, and
you'll say
the paper gives you description.
Yeah, and you'll pick the number of days or hours or whatever the heck you want for your experiment, and then list the people who could maybe support you. Maybe you meet someone you've never met here tonight, and you're like, hey, let's support each other with this experiment, which is another reason I created a Facebook group called Our Experiments. It's a public group. But I created it for the group tonight to start. If you want to, and it's on your piece of paper, this facebook.com/group/ourexperiments. If you want to go there after you've picked your experiment, and any one of us, like, write, type it into Facebook. Tell the group, what is your experiment? What are you trying? How is it working for you? Is it, like, totally blowing up in your face and doesn't work at all? Is it helping in some way? Do you want to alter your experiment? Does anyone have any concepts of, like, how they could alter, how I could alter my experiment? But we can have an ongoing conversation as we all try and really begin to mindfully design a collaborative space with our health and all the entities that make it up.
So take 5 to 10 minutes to talk about safety brain, connected brain, and another 5-10 minutes to talk about what that experiment might look like, and then we'll get back.
Then we'll wrap up for just a couple of minutes at the end. Okay? But I do encourage you to go log on to the Facebook group. It's just a public group. You don't even have to have a Facebook account to do it. And post what your experiment is, and let's support each other so we can have more mindful design of the relationship we have with our health. Yeah, facebook.com/groups/ourexperiments.
Do we have to collaborate if we're...
What's that?
Oh,
no. I wouldn't want that. That's not the message you're taking away, is it? But it's it's such a vital part of good health is the series of relationships that you begin to even know that they are relationships, that you and these other entities do have, we do become that we entity as an organism. So we had also given out, there was a little coupon. We have a blueprint of we collaboration document template for doing a blueprint with your health. So in essence, you're writing about yourself and how you show up, and then you give voice to what health might say to you. What would health say to you if it were sitting across the table from you? And that becomes a dialogue in the collaboration between you and these entities of your health. So if you want to go online to the store, you can either go to Blueprint of We and read about the blueprint first, go right to the collaboration store and take a look at that. But it's a really great place to house all the things that you're experimenting with, what you're learning, watching the evolution of who you are. The me that I am today is very different than the me years ago. It's fascinating. In fact, my mother swears that I'm not the child she gave birth to because I'm so different than I used to be. It's fascinating to watch over the years of having done blueprints to see how much I have mindfully designed a life that is so outside the bounds of normal because I custom designed it to fit me and my health and my body and my mind. And it's a really, really powerful, engaging, and joyful place to be. And I think one of the reasons what I wanted to leave with this idea is that we really are given a lot of stories about being victims of our health, or how challenging it all is, and how awful it all is. And that victim mentality for me was really hard and really heavy, and it was just a lot to carry around. So as much as it's a very loving thing to put people in that role as being a victim of something, it also is not as joyful. It just didn't make me as good for the world. Like, I'm so much better for the world when I'm not believing I'm a victim. And what I realized over time is the opposite of being a victim is collaborative awareness. So you think about self-awareness. We've spent the last 50, 60, 70 years beginning to understand at a greater level what self-awareness is, right? We know when we're being more self-aware. But how do we do this with multiple entities in these ecosystems, whether they're human or non-human? There are people who do blueprints not just with their health or money, but with their animals, with planet Earth, with the land they live on. You name it. There are so many different entities that you can be in this collaborative conversation with, and you can really decide how to build that relationship and give voice to it. So like Juanita and David are here. They have a 90-acre farm up in Burnsville. They did a blueprint between them and the 90-acre farm, and they gave voice to the farm. What would the farm tell them? And the farm told them things like, if you're having a bad day, hike up this hill and sit under this tree, and you'll really feel calmer. I think it also might have said, like, on the west side of the property, I'm going to totally rain or something, or you're going to have flooding or something every spring. Like, the land or the or your health or whatever, they have things to say. And we think we're the only voice that's there. But they're all speaking to us. It's just about whether we understand that it's a relationship, it's a dance that we're doing, and we can make it a really healthy one and an effortless one. Even if it's something like pain, even if it's my relationship to pain, I still can have a really healthy, good, balanced relationship with the messages it gives me, with the way I need to live my life in order to be in a good place with it. And every one of you has that possibility yourself to create collaborative awareness. What is the awareness you can have of self and other and this we entity? How do you build the we entity that fits you? Because everything I did, none of that might be right for you at all. I'm not saying anybody should do what I do. But there's something that's right for you. And when you start having conversations with the things that you're in relationship with, they'll start telling you all kinds of great stuff. And then with whatever comes up, you'll be able to like effortlessly dance with it. So have fun with your experiment. Pay attention. Do an awareness experiment of when you're doing safety brain, when you're doing connected brain. Some people have done like the bracelet or rubber band, like, oh, I just noticed myself doing safety brain again and switching it over to the other wrist so they're paying attention. It's a really interesting thing when you start understanding there's different behaviors, and then you can start really choosing. So I really appreciate everybody coming out tonight. It was really fun to see everybody I do know and meet new people. And I'm so grateful for you guys to have invited us here. It's really lovely. You know, the Integrative Family Medicine of Asheville family is doing great work, and they have a real deep desire for this great relationship with health. So it was a perfect partnership. So thank you. And if there are any questions, like, I'd be happy to answer questions too. And I don't know if you need us to get out of the building. Thank you.
Thank you.